Chapter 11. Face to face. No witnesses. Death along the line. His was the last face I had expected to see here, though it had been in my mind and my nightmares for nearly 100 years.
"It's been a while, hasn't it, Gregor?"
the demon host said softly, almost cordially.
"I've thought of you often, fondly. You bested me on 56 Izar. I held a grudge for a while, I must admit. But when I learned you had survived after all, I was quite delighted. It meant there would be a chance for us to meet again."
The orange cooler suit began to burn and collapse off him in molten hanks until he was naked. He rose gently, arms by his side, like a dancer, and hovered on the wind a few meters above the churned soil. He was still tall and powerfully made, but the aura that shone from him was more sickly green than the gold I remembered. Unhealthy, bulging veins corded his body, and the numb horns on his brow had grown into short, twisted hooks.
"And so we meet again. Aren't you going to say anything?"
I could feel Beckwin shaking in terror beside me. "Stay calm. Stay still," I told her. The demon host glanced at her, and his smile widened.
"The untouchable. How wonderful. An almost exact repeat of our first encounter. How are you, my dear?"
"What do you want?" I asked.
"Want?"
"You always want something. On 56 Izar, it was a necrotuke. Oh, I forgot. You never want anything, do you? You're just a slave, doing another's bidding." Terubael frowned slightly.
"Don't be uncivil, Gregor. You should treasure the fact that I have taken a personal interest in you. Most things that cross me get destroyed very quickly. I could have hunted you out years ago, but I knew there was a bond."
"More of your riddles. More nothings. Tell me something real. Tell me about Vogel Passionata." He laughed, an ugly sound.
"Oh, you heard about that, did you?
Reports of the incident have made me suspect in the eyes of many."
"I know. Bless you, that wasn't my intention. It was just a tiny error on my part. I'm sorry if it's inconvenienced you."
"I have no wish to be seen as a man who would form a compact with demons."
"I'm sure you haven't. But that is what's happening, whether you like it or not. Destiny, Gregor. Our destinies are entwined in ways you cannot even begin to see. Why else would you dream about me?"
"Because it has become a central goal of my life to hunt you down and banish you."
"Oh, this is a lot more than simple professional obsession. Think, why do you really dream of me? Why do you search for me so diligently, even hiding the extent of that search from your masters?"
My mind was racing. This thing knew so much.
"And why did I spare you? If it had been you on Vogel Passionata, I would have let you live. I let you live on Thracian."
"What?"
"You stopped to pay homage at Spatian's tomb, and the gate shielded you from the disaster. Why did you stop? You don't know. You can't explain it, can you? It was me, watching over you, planting the suggestion in your mind, making you pause for no reason. We've been working together all along."
"No."
"You know it, Gregor. You just don't know you know it."
Cherubeo floated away a short distance and looked around. The auction site was frozen, all eyes on him. No one dared move, not even the most weak-willed twist guard. Even those present who didn't know what he was recognized the extraordinary evil and power he represented.
"What are you waiting for?"
a voice yelled from nearby. Several armed men stepped out of their cover in the chew-after tangles and approached. It was Lyco, with six gristly examples of hired muscle.
"Look who I found, Lyco. I sprung this trap, just like you suggested, to discover if anyone was on your tail. And look who it turned out to be."
"Eisenhorn," Lyco murmured, fear crossing his face for a second. He looked over at Cherubael. "I said, what are you waiting for? Kill them and we can be gone." It was suddenly clear to me Lyco wasn't the demon host's master. Like Conrad Molitor all those years before, Lyco was another pawn, a corrupted agent of someone, something else.
"Must I?"
asked the hovering figure. "Do it! No witnesses!"
"Please," cried the elderly Murdoch. "We only meant to—"
Lyco whipped around and incinerated the old man with his plasma gun. That broke the impasse. Fant's people and the other buyers broke in panic, drawing weapons, shouting. Indiscriminate shooting began. Lyco's gunmen, all ex-military types with autocannons, hosed the staging area and cut down the fleeing twists. I saw Fant Mastic hit by a burst of fire and collapse in rough sections, backwards off the platform. His horn-headed minder ran at Cherubael, firing a grubby old las pistol. Cherubael hadn't moved. He was simply watching the murder around him. The las shot sizzled off his skin, and he glanced down at the twist, as if his reverie had been broken. The demon host didn't even move a hand, a finger. There was just a slight nod in the direction of the horned minder, and the miserable twist was somehow filleted where he stood, waves of force stripping off his flesh and popping out his skeleton, parts of it still articulated. I felt the warp churning around that dismal place as Cherubael went to work. Once he had started, his fury was unstinting. Murdoch's Warina Femmes disappeared in a sudden vortex and died, fused together. The mud beneath Vasek's feet boiled, and she and her bodyguards sank, screaming and thrashing into it. I was frozen, rigid. I felt Beckwin pulling at me. Shots seared past my face. I snapped round and saw two of Lyco's men charging us. One dropped suddenly, headshot by what could only have been a sniping round from Husman out in the torn undergrowth. Nail flew past me and gunned the other down with his transversa parabellum.
"Come on, we've got to get out of here,"
he yelled at me. There was blood and filth and swirling plant fiber in the air. A warp storm was crackling around us, so dense and dark we could barely see, barely stand against its churning force, but I could make out the glowing shape of Cherubael through it all. I drew my power sword and ran towards him.
"Gregor, no!"
Beckwin screamed. I had no choice. I had waited the best part of 100 years. I would not let him go again. He floated around to face me, smiling down.
"Put that away, Gregor. Don't worry. I won't kill you. Lyco has no power over me. I'll deal with his complaints later, and—"
"What? Who does have power over you? Who is your master? Tell me. You caused the atrocity on Thracian, didn't you? Why? On whose orders?"
"Just go away, Gregor. This is not your concern now. Go away."
I think he was honestly surprised when I hacked the power sword into his chest. I don't really know if I had imagined I could do him any harm. The blessed blade almost disemboweled him before it exploded and hurled me backwards. He looked down in dismay at the wound across his torso. Warp energies, bright and toxic, were spilling out of it. In a second, the wound closed as if it had never been.
"You little fool,"
said Cherubael. I found myself flying backwards through the air, blood in my mouth. The impact of landing shook my bones and smashed the breath out of me. My head swam. The demon host's power had thrown me a good 30 meters across the site, into the underbrush. Furious psychic detonations went off all around. Screaming, semi-sentient winds from the deepest warp snaked around the field, destroying the last of the twists and the fleeing buyers. I tried to rise, but consciousness left me. When I came to, the chew-after was on fire. There was no sign of Cherubael. Inchabel and Amos were pulling me to my feet.
"Beckwin! Nail!"
I coughed.
"I'll find them,"
Inchabel said.
"Where's Lyco?"
I asked Amos, as Inchabel ran off, weapon drawn.
"Fled, with his men, in two of the landspeeders."
"And the demon host?"
"I don't know.
It seemed to just vanish. Maybe it had a displacer field.
I started to run back into the site, though my body was burning with pain. Amos cried out after me. Most of the vehicles were smashed or overturned, but a couple were still intact. I scrambled into a small black speeder, a sleek, up-hive sports model that had presumably belonged to Vasek. I cued the thrusters, lifting off before I'd even strapped on the seat harness. The craft was powerful and over-responsive. It took a moment to master the lightness of touch needed to accelerate without sudden blurts of speed. I turned it unsteadily in the air as I climbed too fast above the blasted site. Below, I could see Nail, ragged and bloody, shouting up at me to come back. Banking out of the cone of smoke at 100 meters, I got my bearings. On every side, the acreage of the Chewafter spread out until it became lush green cover again. There was the main hive, looming in the distance. Where were they? Where were they? I saw 2 dots in the air, 3 kilometers to the west, and gunned the machine after them. Heavy land speeders, making towards the bulk of the nearest harvester factory. I pushed the turbines to their limit, coming in low and fast behind the slower lift machines. I knew they'd seen me the moment autofire chattered back in my direction, wildly off target. I began to jink, the way Midas had taught me, before they got their aim in. I thought about shooting back at them, but it took both hands on the stick just to keep the sports speeder level. We were passing over green croplands now, an emerald sea that raced away below in an alarming blur. More tracer shots howled back past me. A big shadow passed across the sun.
"Want them splashed?" crackled from the vox.
Down jets flaring, the streamlined bulk of my gun cutter settled in beside me, matching my speed. It seemed huge compared to my insignificant little speeder, 150 tons, 80 meters from beak nose to finned tail, landing gear lowered like insect legs. I could see Medea grinning in the cockpit. I daren't lift my hands from the jarring stick to activate the vox. Instead, I opened my mind directly to hers. "Only if you have to. Try and get them to land."
"Ow!" answered the vox. "Warn me next time you're going to do that."
The great bulk of the cutter suddenly surged forward, afterburners incandescent and landing gear raising, and banked away to the right. Its thrust wake wobbled me hard. I watched it turn out in a wide semicircle, low over the crops, furrowing them with its downwash. It looked like a vast bird of prey swooping round for the kill. With its interplanetary thrust tunnels, it easily outstripped the racing speeders and came in towards them, head on. I felt a surge of psychic power. My enemies had nothing but their minds with which to combat the gun cutter. The cutter suddenly broke left, dipped, and then righted itself. They'd got to Medea, if only for a moment. She was angry now. I could tell that simply from the way she flew. With a wail of breaking jets, she turned the cutter on a stall hover as the speeders flashed past. The chin turret crackled, and heavy gauge munitions tore the second of the 2 speeders into a shower of flames in the air. Hitting the throttle, I zipped in behind the hovering gun cutter, chasing down the other speeder. "No more," I sent to Medea. "I want them alive, if possible." The remaining speeder was close ahead now. I could feel Lyko's mind aboard it. He was closing on the armored bulk of the harvester, which now dominated the landscape ahead. It was a giant, 600 meters long and 90 high at the peak of its humped beetle back. It was kicking a vast wake of sap spray and smoke out behind it. The rattle of its threshing blades was audible above the scream of my speeder's engines. My quarry dipped and flew in along the spine of the huge factory machine, heading for a rear-facing docking hangar raised like a wart on the hull's back. Warning hails were beeping at me over the speeder's vox set, the alarmed challenges of the harvester. The heavy speeder braked hard and landed badly in the mouth of the docking hangar. Turning in to follow it, I saw figures scrambling out. They disappeared into the hangar, all except one man, who dropped to his knees on the approach slip and began firing back at me with his autocannon. Streams of high-velocity rounds whipped past on either side. Then a bunch of them went into my port intake with a clattering roar that shook the speeder and threw shards of casing out in a belch of sparks. Warning lights lit up across the control board. I dropped 10 meters, put the nose in, and bailed. I broke my left wrist and 4 ribs hitting the topside of the harvester. With hindsight, I was lucky not to have been killed outright, lucky even to have hit the harvester's hull at all. It was a long way down. I managed to grab a stanchion cable as I began to slither down and wrap my right arm around it. My speeder glanced once off the approach slip and bounced up again, tail up, beginning to tear apart. Trailing debris, the machine cartwheeled in, vaporizing the gunman, hit Lyko's parked land speeder and shunted it right into the hangar, which exploded a second later in a sheet of fire and metal. I limped along the approach slip, sidestepping chunks of burning wreckage, and climbed over the smashed, smouldering speeders into the hangar. Impact klaxons were rasping out, and automatic firefighting sprays were still squirting out dribbles of retardant foam. At the back of the hangar, a hatch was half open, next to the cages of the service and cargo elevators. I pushed through the hatch. A metal staircase descended into the factory. At the bottom, it opened out into a companionway that ran the length of the harvester. Stunned work crews, most of them twists in sap-stained overalls, gazed at me. I produced my rosette.
Imperial Inquisition! Where did they go?
Who?
Where did they go?
I snarled, enforcing my will without restraint. The effect was so powerful, none of them could speak, and several passed out. All the others pointed down the companionway towards the head of the factory. Another hatch, another staircase. The noise of the internal threshers was now shudderingly loud. I came down into the vast internal work line, a long chamber that ran the length of the harvester. It was a huge, deafening place, the air thick with sap mist. A massive processing conveyor carried the harvested produce along from the reaping blades of the harvester's mouth at a rate of several tons every second. Twist workers in masks and aprons worked the front part of the line with chain tools and cutting lances, which were attached to overhead power systems by thick, rubber-trunked hoses. They sorted and cut the larger sections of root and stalk before the crop went through the great vicing rollers and stamping presses into the macerating vats further down the factory. With the alarm sounding and warning lights flashing, the line had come to a halt, and the workers were looking around, liquid cellulose and sap dripping off their gauntlets, overalls, and work tools. I blundered through them, overseers shouting at me from gantry stations far above. I could see Lyko 30 meters away down the line, pushing through with one last gunman and a bound, visored figure that could only be a Saradon. The gunman turned and fired at me down the length of the line vault. Three workers crumpled, one spilling over onto the belt. The shots spanged sparks off the metal walkways and machinery. As the other workers dived for cover, I dropped to my knee and reached for my bolt gun. It wasn't there. In fact, the entire holster was ripped open. I wasn't sure when I lost it, during Terubael's assault or slamming off the hull of the harvester, but it was long gone, and my beloved power sword had been disintegrated on contact with the demon host. More shots whizzed down the work line and dented the metal facings of the belt drivers. I crawled into cover behind a drum of hydro-back tool wash. I pulled my backup weapon from the ankle holster built into the side of my boot. It was a compact, short-frame auto with a muzzle so short it barely extended beyond the trigger guard. The hand grip was actually longer than the barrel and contained a slide magazine of 20 small-caliber rounds. Selecting single fire, I cracked off a couple of shots. The aim was lousy and the power poor. It really was meant to be a close-range last ditch. The gunman down the line, undeterred by my pathetic display, switched over to full auto and raked the deck area and working space beside the stationary belt. Workers, all pressing themselves into cover, began to scream and yell. The shooting stopped. I dared a look out. There was a clunk and a whir, and the conveyor started moving again. The gunman was following his departing master again. Lyko was almost out of sight, pushing his captive ahead of him. Was a Saradon a captive, I wondered. I still didn't understand the relationship between Lyko, the Psyker, and Cherubael. I ran on. The gunman, Lyko, and his captive Psyker had all disappeared through a bulkhead door. To follow them, I'd have to go in blind. And if I'd been in Lyko's place, I'd have used the bulkhead as a point to turn and wait. My gut readings of his actions had not been wrong so far. I leapt up onto the wide conveyor belt, ignoring the shouts of the cowering work crew, and slithered across it through the matted, sticky crop load. The sap and the moving belt made it nigh on impossible to stay upright. For a moment, I thought I might slip and be carried along under the nearest roller press. I leapt off the far side onto the solid deck, dripping with green mush and vegetal fluid. Now I was following the work line down the other side of the wide conveyor, which divided the harvester centrally. There was a bulkhead door on this side, too. I went through it, low. The gunman was waiting behind the other door on the far side of the moving belt. He saw me, cursed, and turned with his autocannon. I was firing already. Even at this shorter range, the pathetic stopping power of my auto was evident. His drum-barreled autocannon was about to roar out my doom. I dived headlong, thumbing my weapon to auto, and ripped off the entire clip of small slugs in a shrill, high-pitched chatter. What I lacked in power, I made up for in numbers. I hit him 6 or 7 times in the left arm and collar, and staggered him backwards, his bonded armor torn open. The heavy cannon flew out of his hands and landed on the moving belt between us to be carried out of view. He was far from dead, though he was bleeding profusely from the multiple small-caliber grazes and impacts. He was probably glanding some stim that kept his edge. Snarling an oath, he drew a military-issue las pistol from his webbing and climbed up on the workline footrail on his side of the rolling belt to get a better angle on me. I threw the empty gun at him and made him duck, and then grabbed one of the hose-suspended work lances hanging by the line edge. He got off a shot that barely missed my shoulder. I swung the lance at him, the chain blade tip chittering, reaching out across the belt, but it was hard to manipulate it with one wrist smashed. So I turned the swing into a throw and launched the long tool like a harpoon. The chain tip impaled him, and he died still screaming and trying to drag the industrial cutter from his chest. As he went limp, the tension in the rubberized power hose pulled the lance back towards its rest hook on my side of the line, dragging the body onto the conveyor. The belt carried it along as far as the hose would allow, and then it stuck fast, the belt moving under it. Piles of wet plant fiber began damming up against it and spilling over onto the floor. "Eisenhorn," a voice said in my mind. I wheeled round and saw Lyko standing on a grilled gantry that formed a walk bridge over the belt. The plasma gun he had used to burn the fake Asarodon was aimed at me. I could see the battered psyker, his head still masked and visored, lashed to a wallpipe on the far side of the line.
"You should have left well alone, Eisenhorn. You should have never come after me."
"I'm doing my job, you bastard. What were you doing?"
"What had to be done. What needs to be done."
He came down the walk bridge and stepped towards me. There was a hunted, terrified look in his face. "And what needs to be done?" Silence. "Why, Lyko? The atrocity on Thracian. How could you have allowed that? Been part of it?"
I didn't know what they were going to do."
"Who?" He squashed my cheek with the muzzle of his potent weapon.
"No more,"
he said, speaking for the first time. "If you're going to kill me, just do it. I'm surprised you haven't already."
"I need to know something first." "Who knows? Who knows what you know?"
"About you and your little pact with the demon scum. About your theft of an Alpha Plus class psyker. That you stood by while millions died on Thracian.
Ha! Everyone."
I added the answer psychically for emphasis.
"Everyone. I informed Rorkan and Orsini himself before I left on your trail."
"No. There would have been more than just you after me."
"There is.
You're lying. You're alone."
"You're doomed."
He stormed his mind into mine, frantic to tear the truth out of me. I think he was truly realizing how far into damnation he had cast himself. I blocked his feverish mind assault and countered, driving an auger of psychic rage into his hindbrain. It was in there. I could feel it. His true master. The face. The name. He realized what I was doing, realized that I outclassed him psychically. He tried to shoot me with his plasma gun, but by then I had shut down his nervous system and blocked all autonomous function. I scoured his mind. He was frozen, helpless, unable to stop me ransacking his memory, despite the blocks and engram locks he had placed there. Or someone had. There. There. The answer. He uttered an agonized, oddly modulated scream. Lyko tumbled away from me. Cherubael hovered above us, high in the roof space of the factory chamber, casting a glow of filthy warp light. Choking, twitching, his limbs limp, Lyko was rising up towards him. Smoke was coming out of his mouth and nostrils.
"Now, now, Gregor,"
Cherubael said.
"Nice try, but there are some secrets that must remain."
With a nod of his head, he tossed Lyko aside. The traitor Inquisitor flew down to the front of the factory space, bounced hard off the inner hull, and then fell down into the churning reaper blades in the factory harvester's maw. His body was utterly disintegrated. Cherubael hovered lower, grabbed the comatose, bound form of a Saradon like a child picking up a doll.
"I won't forget what you did,"
said the demon host, looking back at me one last time.
"You'll have to make it up to me."
Then he was gone, and a Saradon was gone with him.